Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Fairy Conclave. This is episode 101. I'm your host, Alec. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm super excited to be joined by one of my all-time favorite guests that I've ever had on this podcast. It's Anna Margaret. How are you doing today?
Hello, I'm great. I'm so excited to chat. It was so much fun last time, and I'm thrilled to get to talk about another deck.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Me too. So if anyone out there missed it, go listen to episode 87, where I interviewed Anna Margaret about your Giada Angels, Mono White Angels deck. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was super fun. And I can't believe we did that in 2022.
Oh my
it was over a year ago.
Time isn't real. I'm convinced it's just fake.
Yep. Yeah. I was like, that was like, maybe like 6 months ago. Nope. It was before that. But yeah, it was so much fun. And yeah, ever since then, I have been like, I want to get Anna Margaret back on for another episode just because your energy is so good. And I love it. And you also, like, I guess bonus question before we kind of like get into the other stuff. You've been popping off in the last year.
I'm so flattered that you'd say that. I feel like I don't even know. I think that one of the things that I think is my favorite part about Magic the Gathering is the gathering part. And I think that it's been so fun. In 2023, I got to gather with some people that I've really admired and looked up to and had some really, really awesome opportunities that at some moments felt really unreal. I was like, how did I end up here? Like, what is happening? But it was so much fun. And it makes me so invigorated and excited for 2024. And so I've been having a great time. And this is another thing that I'm super excited about, getting to chat with you and be involved with this. Such a highlight and so much fun. And so I have been traveling the past 2 weeks. And so this is one of the first things content-wise I'm doing in 2024. And so I'm just so thrilled that we get to open the year together.
Yay. Yeah. I was going to say, this is the first episode of 2024. And also I'm going to do like, I thought it was kind of funny. I like announced that I would be starting season 2 of this podcast. Arbitrarily, I guess 100 episodes per season. So season 2 will run for 100 episodes, I guess. And I'll see you in 4 years for season 3. But
love it.
Anyway,
love it.
Yeah, no.
Well, I'll put it on my calendar. Just give me the date.
Okay.
I'll mark it down. Make sure we're ready to go.
Sounds good. Yeah. But yeah, I'm honored to have you on, like, for real. And yeah, it was really fun to see you. You were on the pre-release with Loading Ready Run. I watched those every single time. And it was for Lost Caverns of Ixalan. That was so much fun to watch. Yeah, incredible experience. And then Shuffle Up and Play, episode 41, which I came out like pretty recently within the last month, I think, where, yeah, you played a deck that was really cool and very frightening to everyone in that episode.
It was super fun. It was actually, that was a really funny kind of surreal moment for me, because when I heard the pitch about the episode, Brian asked if I would be interested in being in it. And so, yeah, the professor's super, super nice. And at first he like asked if I would do it and then said, okay, let me tell you about the rest of the pod. It's going to be a scientist pod. And I was like, how did you even know I was a scientist? I think that that's something that's kind of interesting about social media is that in order to succeed, oftentimes you have to kind of like narrow in on a niche. And oftentimes that's just a small part of who you are. And so I realized that, like, while I share a lot about my costuming and a lot of my creative endeavors online, I don't often share any of my professional or education background. And so it was kind of funny as we were getting ready to start the episode. And the other, you know, people, the other two people of the pod, they have like, their social media is all their science education work. And so everyone looked at me and they're like, okay, make sure you introduce that you're a scientist. So I'm like, okay, noted, got it. It's like it was a fun kind of blending of two different parts of stuff that I've done in my life. And so I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. And it's such a fun theme too. And yeah, it's always fun to think of a hobby that's like normally totally separate from your, whatever your professional career is or like whatever else, what other hobbies you have. But I'm also a scientist, so I always see things like in magic that just like make me think of stuff I'm doing at work or like research I've done. And I always think that's so hilarious to see the crossover between things like that.
We are legion. I feel like there are so many scientists and engineers in magic. And every time I turn around, I'm running into someone else. I'm like, yes, we're just slowly taking over. We've infiltrated this hobby and it's really just all of us scientists here. So
it's true. Yeah. Something about the math and like, I don't know, the math behind magic is just hits like that scientist itch.
Although it doesn't mean that I'm good at math and magic, which is something that I always find really funny, because it's like, oh my gosh, I literally have a degree in math. Because, you know, when you get a physics major, you kind of like automatically have a math minor. And like a funny story, I was such a diva in college. I was two classes away from double majoring and getting a math major, but I didn't want to take real analysis. So I was like, nah, I don't want to. And so I didn't. But like, here I am, like literally have a math degree and I'll like struggle with blockers and be like, oh my God, is this lethal? Like, is this not lethal? What should I do? And so I feel like the higher you go up in math, the harder basic addition and subtraction becomes. And so that's my excuse. And so that's all I got. That's why I'm not good at it.
Oh yeah. No, I think that's universal. Like I'm doing complex calculations all day and then I'm like rolling to see who goes first and I'm looking at the dice and it's like 4 + 3 is
exactly. See, okay, you're on the same page. That's exactly the reason it's so hard.
Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, and I mean, besides guesting on other content creator stuff, you also have been cranking out like the highest quality content YouTube videos for one, like all year long. And I love like the kind of theme and energy that you have when like in your YouTube videos. So yeah, just wanted to circle back to that. If anyone hasn't watched Anna's YouTube videos, like I'll have links down below and you have to check it out because it's a combination of stuff that's like relevant to kind of current situations in Magic or like current sets and things like that. But then also other things that you can like, you can go back and watch a year later and it's still like, it's still useful. Useful stuff and just fun. Like you just make fun videos. So
I appreciate you. I joke that while I do make a lot of magic content, I'm definitely more of a nerdy lifestyle brand. And so I have a lot of fun sharing kind of the experience that I have playing magic and how it kind of fits into my life. And so it's really fun and I have a great time. And it kind of brings me back to like when we met, because we met at not this Magic Summit, but the first Magic Summit. And it was just, that was the first game I played that weekend. And I still remember just how much fun we had. And I think that that's what I love about Magic is those memories and those experiences. And so I think that's what I try to share. And I think you do a good job of that too, describing the decks and kind of what makes them fun, not just mechanically, but why did you build this? What's interesting? And so I think that'll be really fun to talk about.
Nice. Yeah. Oh yeah. I totally agree. And so is that kind of the thing that like motivates you to keep up on YouTube videos and other kinds of content is the gathering portion of Magic?
You know, I think that what I found is that if I am passionate and excited about something, I am bubbling to share it. Mm. And so it's really a creative outlet for me that I enjoy. I have joked that YouTube's like my passion project and I actually make all my money and do everything else. But like, I think that being able to find ways to creatively express feelings and stories I have is what I've always looked to do through my art or through the content I make. And so I think that like, anytime I'm doing a photo shoot, I love the experience of it and I'm excited to share that. And so it's kind of the same thing with videos. Like oftentimes if I'm doing a deck update, it's because I made the deck, or if it's a deck tech, it's like, it's my deck. And so I do think that it's a very personal way to express kind of the parts I love, like gathering, being with people and things like that. So yeah, totally.
Nice. Yeah. I love that. I think that passion definitely comes through and you can tell when people are making magic content and like they are having a fun time making it and it's not just like getting to produce this final thing and like finally it's out there, now you're happy about it. Like you can tell that your love for what you're making is like coming through while you're watching it or while you're like looking at the photos or the cosplays and all of that kind of stuff. So Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. That's a really good outlook that is like inspiring. I think everyone should be having a good time making the things that they're making. So
yeah, and if you're not having a good time, you might want to pivot and make something that you do enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think that that can sometimes feel hard. I think that numbers, while very important, can sometimes like cloud your passion. And that's something that I've had to like kind of grapple with, especially like as content creation has become more of my full-time job. I've had to recognize like, yeah, there's going to be things I don't like that I might have to do, but also I'm in control. Like I should just do things that I like to do and find ways to make it fun and creative. And so I think that that's something that it's an energy and a mindset.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Yeah, I do think that's a side of content creation that doesn't get talked about enough is just like if you start not liking whatever you're making, like I feel like it's totally fine to take a break or pivot into something else. For a while, I was making TikToks and I was like, this is fun. And then I stopped and I was like, yeah, no, maybe I'll go back to it someday. But yeah, I don't know. At least if you're able, I understand if you're, reliant on it for income and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I don't know how much farther we want to go down this tangent, but I do like
this will completely change the topic of your podcast. Content creation tips. No.
Yeah, for real.
Another topic for another day.
Definitely. So
I do think that it's kind of like a little bit seeing behind the curtain, talking about the logistics of content creation. But I think that, you know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And that's something I didn't know about at all until I started. And now I really appreciate when I like see all of the work put in by other people making content. And yeah, it definitely changes when you're behind the scenes. It's like it's like people who have worked in a restaurant like for the rest of their lives will always tip 20%, you know, like they're always the best tippers if they've worked in a restaurant before. So, yeah.
No, I think it's so true how, and like, I think about that being a character actress and doing like hundreds of birthday parties and events as different princesses and characters. I have such a different like appreciation for those types of like situations and stuff. And it's interesting how it changes your perspective.
It really does. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it's time to get into it. And so, yeah, the reason why I have you on this episode today is so I can ask you a bunch of questions about one of your favorite decks. And I think we kind of hinted about it earlier, but today we're going to be talking about a deck that you just recently played on Shuffle Up and Play. So I'm really excited to get into that. But really quick before we start, I want to give a shout out to one of my patrons at the Conclave Mentor patron level. So KG, thank you so much for being a patron. I also especially appreciate it lately because I haven't made a new episode in like 3 months. So thank you for sticking around for 3 months while I was taking a break. And I appreciate you so much for that. So yeah, let's get into the interview with my first question for you, which is, who is the commander that we're going to be talking about today? And like, what inspired you to build this deck in the first place?
Okay, well, my commander is Jitty Faye, Jetmir Second. And so it's actually kind of funny. I had just sort of gotten into Magic. And so I've loved board games my entire life. I had a family board game night with my dad and my family every Friday growing up. And so I played so many games. I'm obsessed with Dominion. But I had only just recently been gifted a pre-con from my friends and played a little bit of Commander. And I was getting more into it. And I bought a bunch of new Capenna cards to draft kind of like the pre-release. And I opened Jitty Faye. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am obsessed with this card. I thought she was stunning. I immediately wanted to cosplay her. And I was really intrigued by the idea of a tokens deck, especially one where you could turn your tokens into cats and dogs. And so Jitty Faye, Jetmir Second is from the Cabaretti house or like group or faction from the streets of New Capenna. And so she's a legendary creature that says if you'd create one or more tokens, you may instead create that many 2/2 green cat creature tokens with haste or that many 3/1 green dog creature tokens with vigilance. And so pretty much like the minute I opened this card, I was like, I love it. And so I made a cosplay of her. I built the deck. And something that I kind of have loved about this deck is that I've added and swapped out cards every set. And so even with the deck list I sent you is a little different than the deck list I played on Shuffle Up and Play, because this is one of those decks where I feel like it's one of my forever decks, and I just swap in and out cards. And so I was super inspired by the commander, but have found that I really love many of the cards in this deck. And sometimes it's hard when you're like, I don't know what to pull, but I want to put this in. And so I even have like a little mini sideboard in the back of my deck box of like, I'd like this card in there, but I don't know what I would take out. And so it's kind of a fun, like, revolving deck that I really enjoy.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. I think I definitely have some decks where I just put them together based on something I pulled from a pack. And that's kind of a like an energy or a situation that I think is really special, because looking at card images online is like, you know, I do that every time a new set comes out and I love it. But there's something different about like holding a card in your hand and then you just kind of realize, you're like, ooh, okay, this clicks with me and it feels really cool, and now I have to build a deck around it. Yeah, a very different feeling. So yeah, I love that you had that experience with Ginny Fae during this set. Yeah, and then I think the other thing that I love is these, there's like a cycle of these commanders where it has hybrid costs. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting because I've seen people like build a Ginny Fae deck where it's mono green, because like you can cast Ginny Fae with just green. And I think that's so cool. And I did the same thing. I built an Evelynn deck, which is the same cycle, but it's like you can use black for all of the
She's in the
costs.
Maestros, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, she's like a really cool vampire. Evelynn the Covetous.
Yep, I built that deck too, but I didn't build it in mono black. I made her Grixis.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's super fun. And I just think that's such a clever kind of way to do a legendary creature. I don't know. Anyway, I'm a huge fan of Ginny Fae also. And then the theme is just fun. Like cats and dogs. Like, it's just, it's cute. Like, I love that. What more could you want? Turn all of your stuff into an army of cats or dogs or both?
Like, exactly. I actually, I say peer pressured, but I bribed them with treats. My two dogs posed in my photo shoot because I built this cosplay. And so I did like a few photo shoots and made some like silly videos with this. And I kept bribing my dogs with treats to be in the photos with me. I'm like, come on, I need my dogs here in the pictures with me. And so it was really fun.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Come be a 3/1 green dog with vigilance for me for a little while.
Exactly. My Labrador was much more interested in posing than my husky mix, but so she's in more of the pictures.
Sounds like a husky. Yeah, that's funny. I would like to ask a little bit about this deck's history, and it sounds like I really like how you said it's like a revolving door kind of situation. I definitely have some decks like that I love, because I love brewing decks, and so every time some card like might fit in, I always have like a few slots in a deck where I'm like, I'll just try whatever comes out and see if it works. And I think that's really fun. Do you have any cards like recently, or that you just kind of remember that you have put in this deck that you have found to be like really fun or really good lately?
Yeah, so I actually just stuck in Purphoros, God of the Forge. And while not like a totally new card, it was new to me. I just opened it in a pack because it was always like a little more expensive than I wanted to just purchase. I think that there's some times where there's a really fancier, expensive card that I'm like, I need it. I'm going to buy it for myself. And I'm very driven by the art on cards. I think it's something that I've talked about a lot before, is that really the artwork is a huge draw to Magic for me. I think that like the art is so beautiful, and especially like different alt arts and like secret layers. That's something that I really enjoy about Magic. And so there's times where I will spend a lot of money to have the exact version I want. Like I just look at this deck and even the lands in the deck, and I'm like, you know, they're pretty, and I probably put too much thought into which lands I want, what secret lands I want in the deck and things like that. But yeah, Purphoros was one where I had thought about it. It was like in my mind of something I'd enjoy, but it wasn't until I opened it that I'm like, oh, perfect. I'll just stick that in. And so I had a lot of fun with that. I think, let's see. I also, I recently just purchased the Through the Wormhole Secret Lair. And so I mentioned I'm a physicist. I love astronomy. I love space. And I thought that was just one of the prettiest secret lairs ever. And so I had to put in like the soul ring from that secret lair and just kind of do some like light swaps that I recently did. And so that was really fun. Let's see. I also this is fun. This is kind of like a oh man moment. I recently lost a game because of Elish Norn while playing this deck. And it was a game on Shovel of the Play. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And I had Elish Norn in the deck. And then I took it out to put something else in because I had another deck that needed Elish Norn. And so I forget if I opened it or if I was gifted it. I'm not sure. But Elish Norn recently made her way back into the deck. And I put in a pretty foil version of her. I was like, oh my gosh, that's not happening again. And so I put it back in. And so those are some recent swaps that I just made.
Nice. Yeah, I like it. And yeah, I think the Elish Norn situation on Shuffle Up and Play, it was just so hilarious.
I think there were two. There were like two Elish Norns. And I was like, well, no token's going to survive this. But now that I have my own back in the deck.
The only way to counter an Elish Norn is just with your own Elish Norn.
Basically, that's kind of what I was feeling. And so I needed to put it back in the deck. So
I love that. Yeah. And I really like what you said about the art being such a big draw for you. I feel the same way. Like a card could be twice as expensive in an art that I want compared to whatever standard version or a different version. And I'm like, it's just like such a, I don't know. The beauty of it is a big priority for me.
I totally agree.
And it's like, I'm like a little guilty about that. Like it's a guilty pleasure, which I shouldn't be because it's a big draw for me. But I'll always splurge to get the special art that I want. Yeah.
I think that's one of the best parts about Magic though. Because like you think about like how beautiful all the cards are and it's like you want to play with them. This deck is more than just a vehicle to play the game. It's kind of like an artistic expression. And I think that's something I like about Commander so much as a format. Mm. Like Commander and Oathbreaker, I can have my beautiful pet decks. Like I have an Oathbreaker deck I call my Liliana at the Fashion Show deck and every single swamp is a different swamp. And there's like so many different secret lair swamps. Like it's just I feel like these types of formats lend themselves to that type of creativity with deck building and deck, you know, brewing. And so I really enjoy that part.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's a really good like vehicle for your self-expression. And that's something that I like with my regular play group that I've played with for years on a weekly basis. We don't talk about that as much anymore, but we just had one of my friends who is a super longtime board game guy was just like interested in getting into Magic in the last couple months. And I've been teaching him and he's just like blown away by the art first before he barely cares about the mechanics. He's literally just like the art on this is cool and I want it to be my commander, even if it's like it doesn't really matter what it does. And I really appreciate that perspective. From a new player. And then also like the lands too. I always have special lands in my commander decks, either based on like the plane of where the commander's from or just like cool art that I like from like your secret lair from with the planets and galaxies and stuff. And whenever I start playing my lands in one of the decks, he's always like, oh, can I look at those lands? Those are so cool. I love these. Where'd you get them? And I just love that reaction. That's like, brings me so much joy. So, yeah, big part of this for me as well.
Oh, yeah.
So when it comes to playing the Ginny Fey deck, what is it that you just like most about playing it?
So I call my deck It's Raining Cats and Dogs. And so that's kind of been the joke. Actually, it's kind of crazy that they just announced that they're releasing Wizards of the Coast is releasing one of their pre-constructed decks that they're calling It's Raining Cats and Dogs.
Oh,
and I
was
like, what are the odds? Oh my gosh, they're twins. And so it's kind of fun. I've called my deck this and I already know I'm eyeing that deck because although it's not a Ginny Fey deck, they're releasing a Rin and Sari deck.
Yeah.
I know that that's cat and dog themed and I'm going to want all of the lands or whatever from that deck. But I call my deck It's Raining Cats and Dogs because my goal is to make cats and dogs. Yeah. And so it's definitely a tokens deck. And I put a lot of token doublers in there, as well as token cards that generate tokens. And I think what's kind of fun with this type of token deck is that I can make whatever type of tokens I want, and they will become cats or dogs. And so there's some fun ones, like especially there's a new card from the Lost Caverns of Ixalan that makes map tokens. But and so it's like kind of crazy that for this, the it's an adventure, one of those adventure cards. And so like you can cast the sorcery version for one green mana, and it creates X map tokens, where X is one plus the number of opponents who control an artifact. Mm. And so it's like, oh my gosh, like, yes, those could be map tokens. But like, think about for one mana, how many cats I can have. And so my goal is definitely just to make a lot of cats and dogs. It's funny because I don't have any cats. I just have dogs. But oftentimes when I play this deck, I do love the hastiness of cats. And so I find myself making more cats often than dogs. Also because I love alt win conditions. I think they're really fun. And so in this deck, I run Halo Fountain. And I have actually won using Halo Fountain twice with this deck. And then I've also fizzled my win once when I forgot that dogs have vigilance and they don't tap when they attack. And so I couldn't untap them to win. And I was just staring at them like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? And so I typically lean towards making cats. But my goals are definitely make a lot of tokens, swing with a lot of creatures, and kind of have that like big token synergy.
Totally. Yeah, I really like how Ginny Faye is so flexible when it comes to tokens. Like I don't think there's any other commander that does something very similar to this, because you can, like, for example, Bootlegger Stash. If you need the mana, like you just use it to make treasure tokens. And that's always an option. And you can just like whatever tokens the card is originally making, you can just leave it that way if you need that. But then you also have the flexibility of just making a whole bunch of creatures instead if you want that instead.
Exactly. And Bootlegger Stash is one of those fun cards. Like I know when it was first, I think previewed, people were like, oh, this is going to be broken. And then people swung the other way and they're like, no one uses it. It's terrible. But I actually love this card in this deck. And I've played it many times. And I think it's unbelievably fun, especially if there's a token doubler out there to just get so many cats. Like, it's great. If you have enough mana to cast Bootlegger Stash, you probably have enough mana for those cats to feel very threatening if you get a cat, you know,
for real.
And so I think that the flexibility of Ginny Faye is something that I love so much, and it adds a lot of fun decision making to playing the deck, but that doesn't feel too formulaic. I sometimes struggle if I have a deck that is very I don't want to say straightforward, that's not exactly the word I want, but it's kind of the idea of if there's like a certain path that the deck does well, and if you stray from that, it doesn't necessarily do well. I appreciate that. I appreciate that there's lots of ways you can take this deck, and I really enjoy playing my deck just because I feel like no matter what cards are in my opening hand, it's fun for me. I don't have to necessarily, it's not like sometimes when I'm playing standard or whatever, like I want a certain opening hand or I want a certain path to victory. And I enjoy playing this, especially in kind of that mid-high power casual range, just because it's fun. There's lots of fun ways forward. There's lots of fun ways to generate tokens in an interesting way. And so I really enjoy that about the play pattern.
Totally. Yeah. And I think when I have been trying to build decks in the last year or so, that's exactly what I look for, is for commanders that like give you lots of decisions to make, lots of options. And those are always the ones that have like high variance in what happens in their games, but not necessarily in like a power scale of variance, just like of different things happening, but you still feel like you have synergy and that like your deck is doing something. That's exactly the kind of thing that I have been looking for in commanders, and this is exactly it. It's like you can just go ahead and then, you know, whatever's happening on the table too, like maybe you want the hasty creatures to get in like before they can start blocking, or maybe you need to be blocking also, you can make the dogs instead. Yeah, and I really like all of that flexibility. It's just, it's really cool. And I'm sure that contributes to the longevity of this deck, like how long you're going to keep it around. Your forever deck definitely needs some of that. So yeah, I like that. The way you described it, it's like a pretty straightforward overall strategy. It's like make tokens and then win by attacking people with them. Do you have any other kind of like goals that you have when you play this deck or anything like that? Or is it just kind of like see what happens and try to make a lot of tokens of whatever I can?
Yeah, I think it depends on the game. I mentioned that Halo Fountain's one of my pet cards. I put it in a lot of decks. I have it in, I actually had it in my Giada deck, I think we talked about. I have it here. I like it. I think it's fun. Like I mentioned, I'm a huge fan of alt-win conditions, and so I really enjoy that. I think also I sometimes have the mini goal of just seeing how many tokens I can make. Ooh. I think that like my goals in games aren't always necessarily to win. I think it depends on the situation. I am in a really competitive person, so there are times where my goal is to win. But I think that like in these types of social formats, that might not be my goal. And so I know that I've had up to 52, I've made 52 tokens in a turn, and that was wildly fun. I think that there was one time where I lost because somebody used a deflecting palm when I was swinging for over 4,000 with my Devilish Valet. And so that was fun. I don't think I'm ever going to top dealing that much damage to myself, but that'll obviously be a goal sometime I play. Like, we'll see if I can pull that off again. That was pretty crazy. And then only after the game did I realize, I'm like, oh no, I had something in my hand that could have, oh well, too late now. Like, I could have stopped it. But so things like that, I think that while the goal of making tokens is generally my goal, I think that there's lots of ways to have fun with that kind of archetype.
Totally. Yeah. Some of my favorite decks I've played are just like simple token decks of whatever kind. And then you just kind of like see what happens, see what you can do with them. And I meant to say, I really like what you mentioned about Halo Fountain, because for people out there who want to build a Jenny Fay deck or just a similar deck, I think that note that you had about how the dogs have vigilance, which all of Halo Fountain's abilities require you to untap stuff. And I love that you mentioned this because I play Halo Fountain. I have a really silly Myojin of the Blooming Dawn commander deck.
Wait, I think I have that in here.
No way. Do you really?
No, wait, do I? Wait, let me look. Yeah, I literally do. I have Myojin of the Blooming Dawn in the deck.
Yes. Okay. We are literally the same. So I've been wanting to build a mono white deck for a long time. And I wanted it to be something that I could, because a few years ago, people are like, mono white's the worst. So I was like, I'll prove you wrong. And eventually it morphed into a Myojin deck just because I thought it would be a cool thing to have like an 8-mana mono white commander that just seems silly with like lots of hoops you have to jump through. But one of the things I found is there are a lot of white kind of like token deck related cards that give your creatures vigilance just like as an add-on. A lot of cards do that. And of course, I was playing a lot of them because they're powerful. But yeah, I was trying to win with Halo Fountain, and I kept realizing I can't use this because everything has vigilance. Yeah. I can't even like.
I know. It happened to me one time, and I'm pretty sure my younger sibling will never let me forget it because it was funny. I think I did still end up winning the game, but it was more out of spite at that point. Like, okay, well now I'm just swinging with all these dogs.
Yeah.
But it is kind of funny. I do white does give a lot of vigilance, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good example.
I can't believe I'm obsessed with this card.
It's funny
that you had a commander deck. And I feel like it has actually been really useful in this deck. Because, making a 1-1 colorless spirit creature token for each permanent you control is great. But what if you're instead making a 2-2 cat with haste? It's basically like a win condition, yeah?
So
I think, or like a dog. And so, yeah, I had a lot of, I also run that card. It's great.
Totally. Yeah, I will say in mono white, it's like, it's still not great. There's a lot you have to do to make it good. Like crashing drawbridge to give them haste is kind of your only option. But yeah, with Jenny Fay, where you can essentially like turn all of those, because it makes a million spirits. Like you're making like 20 of them. When you activate this, usually something like that. And yeah, turning them all into 2-power hasty cats. Oh, that's so much better. Yeah, I love that. Cool. Okay, that makes me even more excited that I have this deck. But yeah, I think it is good to be aware of those kind of like non-bows with Vigilance and Halo Fountain. But, and this is exactly, it's reminding me of Joey from EDH Rec did a video exactly on this topic. It's like non-bows or like anti-synergies in your deck, but that you still play. You just kind of have to be aware of them. Like if you know you're going to play Halo Fountain, then you probably just want to be making cats instead. And that's like a pretty easy thing to do once you're aware of that. Of that little situation there. So yeah, I like that. And then kind of, I guess on a similar note, what would you say this deck's weaknesses are when you go to play it?
I feel like any like creature token or creature centric deck is going to be very vulnerable to board wipes. And so I think that like, I definitely do run cards to kind of attempt to mitigate that a little bit, like, you know, King Darien or different things that can give your tokens either indestructible or can protect them in some way to like not have all your tokens just immediately removed before they could do anything. I think that I found in playing that when you make a lot of creatures or you make a lot of tokens, you do kind of immediately put a target on yourself. And something that I've kind of discovered with playing is that games are more fun if you are the threat or the villain, you just acknowledge it. And so I try to always be like transparent, like, hey, I'm gonna make a lot of things. Just so you know, that's what I'm doing. Or like, oh, my goal is to try to make as many tokens as possible. Like I personally don't really love board wipes. I have only one board wipe in this deck. And I have found that I don't think I've ever cast it when playing this deck. I just don't know if it's ever happened. But I do run one. But I think that I tend to only cast a board wipe if I think I can win either that turn or the next turn. So I lean more towards one-sided board wipes if I'm going to put them in a deck, or if I'm like, okay, like if I do this, I will set myself up for success if I have some way of doing that, whatever.
And gotcha.
But I also recognize this deck's very weak to that. Your creatures are only helpful if they're on the board, not if they're like in the graveyard or exiled. And so I think that is definitely a weakness, but I also don't think that that's necessarily like a bad thing. I think that if you become too threatening, somebody should stop you. And so if I'm becoming too much of a threat, definitely wipe my board. Or like, hopefully I have something in my hand that can stop you from doing that, or I have some way to protect them. But
totally,
I think that's a predictable weakness. I think another one that I know that I have and I know I need to fix it, that's why I'm like looking over here at like, say, Guardian Project that's off to the side as like what I want to put in. I sometimes have noticed while I do have card draw on the deck, I think that is one area that I know I could put more in. And I think that like it's funny because you'll be like, oh, but wait, I want to have things that make tokens or things that double my tokens. And then you're playing and you're like, oh, no, I should have put more card draw. And so I think that that's something that I sometimes a trap I sometimes stumble into, because really the more cards you have, the more options you have. And I know that and I want that. But I still sometimes am like, oh, man, but it's so pretty. I could put in this card instead. And so I think that like, while it's not a major like weakness of this deck, I think it's an area I as a deck builder can always improve upon by having more card draw. So I'm just gonna say probably that too.
Totally. Okay, I love all of that. I think the thing that I also see when I'm playing my Myojin tokens deck is it does get pretty scary pretty fast. And it's true, you really do have to embrace that you are a problem for the other players. And if somebody like wipes the board, or even in a tokens deck is like extra fragile when it comes to like bounce spells, I feel like are played like along with board wipes, and those will just like wipe your tokens pretty often. And yeah, when that happens, I'm like, yep, you did it. You should do that. Like, you made it.
Yeah, it's about being it's an attitude thing. I think that, you know, you're responsible for the attitude that you bring to a table. And really, your attitude makes a huge difference for how fun a game is. Like, it can be someone's favorite game, or it could feel bad and feel salty depending on what energy you bring. And so I always try to bring a positive energy and recognize that like some games are going to feel really explosive and that'll lead to victory. Some games will be really explosive and that'll mean that I will immediately become a target and will do nothing else the rest of the game. And that's fine too. And like both can be really fun, and that I have that power to influence the feeling of the game for other people. And that's really special. And that's really cool. And I want them to leave feeling like, wow, did you remember that moment where I just wiped her entire board? Or like, oh my gosh, like she couldn't even play anything because there were two Elish Nords on the board. You know what I mean? It's like, I have the power to control the energy, and I try to always make it fun and good. And when you're playing a deck where like the goal is to have maybe a very big or explosive turn or a lot of creatures, or like especially if I want to like double things more than once, I think there was a time where I think I run three different token doublers. I'd have to double check, but I think I have like Mondrak, I have Doubling Season and Primal Vigor, I think.
Yep.
And so I'm pretty sure I think oh yeah, and then I think I used to have Anointed Procession, but I moved it to put in my Galadriel deck because I was like, that's too many. I don't need that too many. But like I think that there was a game where I had like two different token doublers out, and then you're like, oh, and let me just casually make all these creatures. Like, I think that when you're playing a deck that could be really explosive, it's good to communicate, obviously, and also recognize that that's swingy. It could go either way. Like, and that's fun. And
it is, yeah, and that's kind of the thing about token decks too, is they are swingy, and they're like everything they have is generally on the board, so it's not like it's unexpected when you're setting up your token doublers. Like people can see it coming, and I always think that creates a really fun story, whether you killed everyone with a bunch of tokens or whether you almost did and they were able to stop you, or if you had like heroic intervention at just the right time. All of that is exciting. And and all of it makes it like those are the kinds of games that I want to play of Commander. Stuff where you get to see people do their thing and it's exciting whether you win or lose. I don't really care about that as much. So yeah, I love that. I think that's a really good outlook that everyone should have. As far as the kind of like card draw deck building thing goes, that's a really interesting one because I also have a hard time with that sometimes. Because a lot of commanders draw cards. Mm-hmm. And then what I tend to do is I'll like overcompensate for the ones that don't. So I'm like pondering into a Serum Visions, into a Read the Bones. I'm like, okay, I've played four spells this turn, but I only drew like, I've like filtered a little. I don't know. I definitely, it's like a balance that's hard to find. So
And I feel like you find it as you play the deck more and more. And so I do think that I have I know that I have better card draw than I did when I first built it, because I know this was one of the first decks that I built, not the first, but one of them. And so I do know that I'm like, at first it didn't. I don't know. I'll have to play some more and I'll let you know. But I think it's gotten better.
Totally. Yeah. And then, one other thing I've kind of noticed in decks that you like make a couple of changes to every set or so, it'll kind of like after a year or two, you might have realized like, oh, I took out like a few too many lands for other things, or I took out some like it. The tiny changes over time add up to something that like maybe needs to be fixed and adjusted like in a bigger scope, I guess. That's something I've noticed.
I do think that thankfully it's tempting to swap out lands for cards, but something I've noticed about myself is the more I like my lands, the less I'll do that. So if I like pick the full art or I have the pretty lands, I'm much less likely to pull it because I'm like, it's part of my aesthetic. It's part of the vibe of the deck. I can't swap it out, then I'd be missing it. And so I think that like, you got to hack your own brain.
Yeah.
And like, if I think the card is pretty, I won't pull it. And so that, you got to make your lands work for you. If it's basic and boring, like, yeah, I'm going to pull it.
Totally.
And so I think that that's something that I kind of think of. And it's an interesting point that you made about like commanders that might draw cards or might facilitate something in some way. And then that leads itself to building the deck. I think that's something that is really interesting about Jenny Fay, is that while I feel like she clearly enables a token deck, she herself doesn't make tokens. And so I think that that's something that like as I was building the deck and as I play it, that I've had to be really cognizant of, because she doesn't make tokens herself and is only really useful if you have other cards that are generating tokens. And so like I think that that's something that's kind of fun when building the deck. It means you can put in a lot of cards that do generate tokens, but it does mean that, like, if there's nothing else on the board other than her, she's not going to do anything until you have other cards making tokens. And so I think that, like, you know, when building around a commander, like, that it's something to consider. What does your commander do? What types of strategies does your commander facilitate? But then also, what cards do I need to have in the deck that actually support that or make it work or make the deck do the thing? Because you want your deck to do the thing, and she herself won't do it without some support.
Okay, that's exactly why I love making these episodes so much, because that's something, like, when I look at Ginny Fae, I'm like, yeah, she makes tokens for your token strategy, but you wouldn't really realize until after building the deck and playing a couple times, you're like, she actually doesn't do that at all. She just changes tokens you already have from other stuff. So yeah, I could definitely see a situation where you play Ginny Fae and then play, like, Doubling Season or something. Yeah. And then you're like, you don't have anything that makes tokens in your hand. You're like, I didn't put enough of these in, and now I'm literally not, there's nothing happening.
Yeah, like, there's nothing to do. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so I think that, like, you know, if when building this deck, I think that that's something, maybe something that could go wrong. But I think that, like, also there are so many fun cards that generate tokens. And so I think it's easy to go right and just make tons of tokens. And
true.
So it's easy to do it well, too. And I know that there's, like, I think that something that's kind of fun is that there are, like, fun cat and dog cards, too, that can support your tokens or ways that, like, buff your tokens or, like, can help in that way. And so I don't have many of those dogs. I think maybe I have one, but I did put in some fun cats that, like, boost all your cats. And I'm like, and I'll be making cats, you know,
so
or
good.
Things like that. So I think it's easy to do well, but it is kind of interesting because I think she is one of those commanders where she herself needs support to function.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that's kind of the opposite of, like, my Myojin deck, where the commander itself is what you're, like, building up to make the tokens. So you're kind of, you don't really care about other things making tokens as much. You, like, want the card that turns them all into angels or whatever, and that kind of thing beforehand. And then you can use your commander for the tokens. But this is kind of that same setup, but, like, reversed. You want the token stuff. Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that. I had not thought about it that way until just now. And my next question is, do you have a, like, MVP card or just, like, a card you might pick out as being the most synergistic in this deck?
I don't know. Maybe not most synergistic.
Or just your favorite.
Or just my favorite. Okay, that is interesting. So I've already talked about some of them. I think a card that, I guess maybe this would be one that I just like, and we've been specifically talking about card draw, so I think it's relevant. I love the card Idol of Oblivion. It's that 2-mana artifact that you can tap it to draw a card, activate only if you created a token this turn. This card has always just done so much work for me, because since my goal is to make tokens, it's so nice if you can just be like, and I'll get a card too. That's great. Like, thank you, I'd like this card. So that's one that I find that I really enjoy. I think another card that is just one of my favorites in this deck, I'll list two, is I really like Gallagreeters. I think that Gallagreeters is such a, again, flexible card. I love it when you're able to, like, pick something, if that makes sense. And so the alliance trigger is really great. You can either, you know, put a 1/1 counter on Gallagreeters, create a tapped treasure token, or gain 2 life. And I find that that's nice. I like being able to have kind of like a inexpensive or like low mana card that can give me a flexible token, whether that's a cat, a dog. Yes, it enters tapped, but the next turn that can be really nice. So I kind of look at that. And then maybe another card that obviously I really like the ones that do big things, like a like Grand Crescendo or, you know, Heroic Intervention. Like, those are all fun. But I found that, like, there's a card I put in, Prosperous Partnership, and it's not like a super useful card. Like, I feel like I wouldn't put it in any other deck, but I do really enjoy it in this deck. I think that when it enters the battlefield, you create 2 green and white citizen creature tokens, and you can tap 3 untapped creatures you control to create a treasure token. And so this is something I've had a lot of fun with dogs with. So basically, you have this card out and you have these dogs with vigilance. They can attack, but then also I can wait and then before my turn, tap three of these to make another dog.
Yeah.
Or something, or a treasure. And so that's been kind of a fun way, especially when, like, you know, like I said, Jenny Fay herself doesn't make tokens, just kind of like a way to utilize my creatures to maybe make another token and get something there. So
nice.
I think those are ones that are kind of fun, more utility flavored cards that I've been like, oh, I'm glad passed me, put that in the deck. I wouldn't have thought of that card just off the top of my head, but I'm glad it's here. And so I think that's, those are kind of fun ones maybe to shout out.
Totally. Yeah, I like Prosperous Partnership a lot in this because it's like, it's a card that will make tokens, but then it like sticks around and has some extra utility for later on. You can like use it to continue making tokens later. And I gotta say, like, Idol of Oblivion has just gotta be an all-star in any card, any deck that makes tokens. Like,
any token deck, it's only 2 mana. Oh, it's like, what? It's so good. I stick it everywhere. I feel like you have those cards that you just like put everywhere, and that's one for me that I guess I run a lot of token decks. I'm like, this is going everywhere. Like,
so good,
especially with treasure tokens being, you know, a token, I end up sticking this everywhere. I'm like, yes, card draw,
so good. And I like in this deck especially that it's like pay, cost two, so you can play it on turn two, and then you like curve that into Jenny Fay on turn three, and then after that you're just like tokens, drawing cards, making tokens, drawing cards. And also kind of hilariously, if you get to that 10/10 Eldrazi token ability, probably one of the few times you don't want to change it into a cat or a dog, you can just leave it.
I guess. I don't know. I don't think I've ever done that. Like,
I don't think I have either.
I've joked that I run this in so many decks, but I don't think I have ever made the Eldrazi creature token. But no, I think there's a lot of fun cards that I enjoy playing. I think something that is kind of fun is Jetmir. I know a lot of people will build Jetmir decks, and they might have Jenny Fay in the deck. And I think it's really fun to have a Jenny Fay deck that runs Jetmir Nexus of Revels in the deck, because it's just so good. Because Jetmir gives creatures you control get +1/+0 and have vigilance as long as you control 3 or more creatures. They get +1/+0 and have trample as long as you have 6 or more creatures. And they can get +1/+0 again and have double strike as long as you control 9 or more creatures. In a token type of deck, it's very easy to get 9 creatures. And then your creatures are getting +3/+0 with vigilance, trample, double strike. So if you have like a 3/1 dog that becomes a 6/1 dog with like double strike and trample, like, it's just so wild. And so I've found that Jetmir has ended up almost like a win condition for me, like, especially if like you wait to play it and then just like swing. It's been very fun. And I also think it feels thematic because she's Jenny Fay Jetmir second, and then you run Jetmir Nexus of Revels. And so I enjoy having that card in the deck too. I feel like there's, you know, when you have a deck for a while, that's like it's one of my favorite decks, and I end up like putting lots of signed cards or like, you know, fun things. Like there becomes a lot of cards that you can be like, oh yeah, I remember getting that signed at, you know, Command Fest, or like, oh yes, one of my friends mailed me. It's like, one of my friends sent me the autographed Jenny Fay card and like a poster of her. And so it's like, you know, you have those kind of memories associated with different cards. And so I think that's a tricky question because there's so many that I'm like, oh,
it's true. It's
that one. Or like, I remember a story of playing that card, or, you know, different things like that. Or like, I have like the Elspeth Sun's Champion that came in the advent calendar, where it's one of those planeswalkers where instead of having like the really nicely laid out loyalty abilities, it's all just written as a paragraph, and it's silly and it's ridiculous, and I have to stare at it every time I play it, like, what does this card do again? But I love it, and it's pretty. And so that's another one that I guess could be considered a pet card, because I'm like, oh, it's so hard to read, but I'm obsessed. The art is pretty. I put it in there. And so I don't know.
Oh yeah, totally. No, I don't think like your favorite cards or your pet cards, I love things that are like, this card is just not great, but I, you know, it has like a memory associated with it, or like an event I went to or something like that. One of my like most prized magic possessions. One of my friends who had like moved far away just randomly sent me a murder that he had signed. And just like randomly getting that in the mail, I was like, I'm framing this. And I've just had a signed murder framed. And it's like one of my favorite cards. Yeah. And stuff like that, I think just is, yeah, is really special. So, yeah. And I think it's cool. It just like for me, what I want is when I'm playing is every card I look at, if it makes me smile, it doesn't matter if it's because it's good or it's like going to be the card that wins me this whatever situation. Yeah. It's like, because I don't know,
it's fun.
Somebody, yeah, it's silly or like somebody doodled on it. I don't know. Like it makes me smile and that's what matters.
I love that. I feel exactly the same way. I think that there's the cards that are really good that you're like, oh yes, if I get Champion of Lambholt or Beastmaster's Ascension, like I'll win the game. And then there's the ones that are really fun that are like, it showed up. So cool. Like gotta play that one. And so I think it's part of the joy, like we mentioned earlier, of deck building is that it can be very personal and very fun, especially with Commander. And so, I think that there's a lot of kind of favorites or fun cards in the deck. But circling back to your question, are there any MVP or most synergistic cards? I don't know if I answered that question, but I'm sure there are. Like maybe Champion of Landhold and Beastmaster's Ascension. Maybe I can say those are the most like synergistic.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's kind of hard because especially tokens in green, white, and red, like all of these cards are working together in some capacity. And
hopefully, if I did a good job, hopefully, I think so. I think they're mostly there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and they all, you know, play different roles in the situations, whether they're like making tokens or making them bigger or like doubling them or whatever. I like it. So it's kind of it's hard to decide for sure.
Yeah, totally.
Nice. Okay, so I am excited to hear about this question, which is, do you have a favorite like in-game moment that comes to mind that you had while you were playing this deck?
Okay, so I feel like I already alluded to this earlier, but a kind of funny in-game moment is there's a card, Devilish Valet, and it's from the New Capenna, the Streets of New Capenna. And it has trample and haste and an alliance trigger that whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, double Devilish Valet's power until the end of turn. And this is just wild. As someone who loves math as much as me, you know that this just, it goes crazy, like so fast, being able to double the power every time a creature enters the battlefield. And so with a tokens deck like this, you can get a lot of creatures entering the battlefield. And so there was a time where I got Devilish Valet's power over 4,000 and trample and haste, and I swung and I had already knocked out the other two members of the pod. So it was just me and one other person. And in hindsight, I think I had like a Boros Charm in my hand and I probably could have done something, but I didn't do anything. And the opponent I was playing used Deflecting Palm and sent that over 4,000 damage back at me. And it was just the funniest moment that I've like, it was just ridiculous. I was like, okay, first it's ridiculous that I'm swinging with a creature that has power over 4,000. Yeah. Second, it's ridiculous that it's getting swung back at me. And I'm just like, yeah, that's it. That's game. Like, you got it. And so it was ridiculously fun. And I think I took a picture and I was like, this is wild. Like, I lost so well. And so it was great. That was at MagicCon Philly. And it was just so much fun.
So good. Yeah, I think some of my favorite stories in Commander have come from Deflecting SWAT. Similar cards like Ink Shield, Comeuppance is very similar. And yeah, those things where it's like, I have you for sure. And then it's like, actually, you're going to be doing that damage to yourself. And it's, I just think that's so funny.
It was so fun. And so it felt really thematic and perfect. And so I think that's probably my favorite in-game moment with this deck. It was really fun. I think if I had to pick one other, I always really enjoy when other people play decks that I've built. It kind of feels like, handing something off and be like, here, enjoy this thing that I made and that I spent a lot of time on and that I love. And so every time people have played decks that I've built, it feels like such a fun, like, privilege to get to share that with somebody and have them kind of experience the deck. And so I was playing, my dad is also a physicist. He's way smarter than me. My dad has an equation named after him. He found the mass of the Milky Way. So my dad is incredibly smart. And I love playing Magic with him. And I built him decks for big holidays. So I've built him, I think, two different decks. And so he'll play whatever decks I build him and he enjoys it. And so one time he played this deck and it was wild. I lost really badly, but it was so much fun to see him be like, wait, do I get 15 tokens? I'm like, yeah, you do. And this is such a problem for all of us. Like, it was so much fun. And so I think when we were playing, he played Impact Tremors. And I think we all died that way. I think it was just Impact Tremors. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, it deals one damage to each opponent. And so I'm pretty sure we just got knocked out by tokens being generated. But it was really fun. And it was so cool to see kind of the cogs ticking for him and be like, oh wait, oh wow, okay, that's a lot of tokens. And I'm like, I did the thing, it's doing tokens. And so I sometimes love to see other people succeed, whether they're playing my deck or similar strategies. I know when Kyle Hill ended up winning the Shuffle Up and Play episode that I played this deck with, and he won with Infinite Cats, I was like, what? This is perfect. Like, oh my gosh, I had no idea you were also sneakily trying to get as many cats as possible. Look at us. And so I think those are all fun memories and moments with this deck.
Yes. Yeah. It's so rewarding to like share your deck with somebody that you have so much heart and soul in, and then see them like working it out and enjoying it and like doing something. Like, I honestly feel like giving somebody a deck and having them win in some epic way is so exciting to see, and it's better than me doing it for sure.
I agree. Like, I honestly, it feels like validating in all the right ways. Like, yes, yeah, you took this thing that I did great with it. And
yeah,
it feels awesome.
Totally. Yeah. And then it kind of, it's like validating to you as a deck builder too, because sometimes if my deck isn't working, I'm like, I can just kind of keep it to myself. I'm like, I'll have to work on this later. But if somebody else is playing one of your decks and it's like working beautifully and like everything is like, they're drawing cards and they're doing the thing, you're like, I feel good. Like, my deck building paid off and somebody else proved it to me, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, you know, when you're doing poorly at a game, I feel like there's lots of different ways to approach it. Like, am I the problem? Am I playing poorly? Is my deck the problem? Did I build my deck poorly? Or am I just having some, am I running into the fact that a major part of any type of game like this is mechanical randomness in shuffling? Did I shuffle poorly? Am I drawing poorly? Like, there's lots of different reasons why a game could be going well or not for you. And I think sometimes people internalize too much of like, oh, I'm the problem. I'm not playing well. When really, like, you're probably not the problem. Yeah. And I think moments like that can be a good reminder that there's so many different variables and factors that play in a game like this, especially when there's like the added randomness of targeting and politics that comes into a game. So you have more than just the mechanical randomness. You have this like additional social element that can change a whole thing. And so I think that while I was teaching, before every test, I'd make students repeat out loud, my self-worth is not determined by the score I get on this, you know, physics final or computer science test or computer science project. And so sometimes I feel like people need to remember before they play Commander, my self-worth is not determined by how well I perform in this Commander game. And I think that while that is totally true, it is nice to have validating moments as well.
Yeah. Okay. I love that so much. That's like, I feel like internalizing that would like solve so many problems that it can be like the base of, like, if you're internalizing that like you're not good at playing, you're not good at deck building, that kind of thing, it'll make you saltier when you're playing and it'll make it like just a worse experience. And yeah, all of that kind of boils down to like, we're just here to have a good time. If it doesn't work out, you know, like you really get into the statistics. Like, you could build your deck at exactly the middle of that bell curve where you're getting like perfect number of lands and non-lands, and a little pieces of everything you need, but it's always like a curve. You could be on either end and it's not your fault. It's just how it goes. Yeah, and that's something I've, like, my new player friend who I've been teaching the game to, I'm like, you know, if you're drawing too many lands, don't worry about it. Like, that's just how this game works. It has a huge randomness element to it. And that's just, you know, over time playing more, you just get used to it. And you're like, yeah, we'll try it again. And if it happens, you know, multiple times in a row, maybe we can adjust something here and there, but try not to worry about it. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a really big thing in Commander just as a whole. And I think it's important to talk about.
I think that whenever there's random, every game will have some element of randomness. And I think that I'm happier when I have a positive attitude about it. And I'm like, well, sometimes, like Settlers of Catan, that's one where, like, I try never to be salty, but I'm also like, these dice, like, what is happening? Like, you know, math is not working for me. And so I think that the more you can keep that in mind, just it's good.
For
and
real.
And I think that it's something you know, as I'm building Commander decks, I want to keep in mind, like, what are my goals? And, like, with this deck especially, like, my goal is to play this deck in, like, fun, mid-high power, casual, like, games. I want it to be social. I want to play with people and have it be a fun experience. And if that means that they might be salty from it, like, hopefully that's not the case. But I think that, like, as long as, you know, the goal is to have fun, that I think I've succeeded. I know that there was a time I played this deck against Bobby Christine and some people. I think we were playing after, I think it was DreamHack Atlanta. And I forget, I made way too many cats or dogs. I think I was like helping somebody else learn to play and it was just wild. And now every time Bobby sees this deck, she's like, oh no. And so, I mean, you know, not you can't make everybody happy in a Commander game, but the goal could be to make everybody happy. And I think it's now become like a funny joke. And so I think that as I built this deck, that was my goal. And I think oftentimes it's met that goal. It's been fun and it's made for a fun pod and experience.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. I think it is important to have the smaller goals of just your deck and what it's trying to do and because of the cards you put into it. But then, like, zooming out a little bit, also the goal of how that fits into your playgroup or in your randomly assigned playgroup at a convention, and like what the deck will look like in that situation, and then what your like personal goals are when you're just like your social goals when you're trying to set the game up for success and to have a good time. It's it's something that you should just be thinking about, and it always makes things better, even if you're you don't make any changes because of it. It's just like a little bit of a different positive outlook or attitude will make a big difference, even if you can't tell. Like, maybe the other players can. So, yeah, I think that is important.
Yeah. I love the way that you put it of like thinking about your deck in the context of where it will be played. I think so often, like maybe when you're looking at a commander or you're building a deck, it's really easy to focus on those more concrete goals for the deck itself, and being able to kind of like step back and think about like where, how do I want to play this deck? What games is this deck made for? Like, I know that I do have some mean decks. I definitely am sometimes like, ooh, Eldrazi? Like, what if I ninjutsu these out? Like, I, you know, sometimes you do build decks that are very like, very mean or have things that might feel mean, like creature theft or like poison counters. Like, there's different things that might feel a certain way, and having the forethought to think about like what context will this deck fit well in, what types of games do I want to play this deck in, and then how can I accurately communicate that to my pod so that we're all on the same page and we're all ready to have fun and play the game that we all are interested in playing. And so I think that when building a deck, that's a great outlook to have.
Yeah. And it's really interesting to think about because it's different for each pod based on the people who are in it. And honestly, like a perfect example of this is my Evelynn the Covetous deck.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've experienced. And it's like, so the whole point of the deck is to be playing your opponent's decks. You like exile cards off the top of their decks and then you can cast them later yourself. And that is a deck I will never play with random people at a convention. I just won't, because it's a lot of like me touching their cards. It's a lot of, I have like, you know, half their deck on my side of the board. I'm trying to organize it. It's just a deck I will only play with my play group that I, you know, have been playing with for years, and we're all very comfortable, and I can, nobody's worried about anything happening with their cards, and it's not like busy people moving around. And in that context, so one of the funnest decks to play, so much fun, and people love to see when I'm like taking cards from their different decks and putting them together in different synergies, and so much fun. But I just, unless people are really, really okay with it and they like ask me to play it, I can do that. But yeah, people who I'm playing with for the first time, that deck is just at the bottom of the list. So yeah, that's why I think about the context a lot. It's just decks like that. And then, I don't know, it's a really interesting topic, and I enjoy discussing it with you. I feel like we could talk about this all day long.
Yeah. Yeah, the social elements of the game is interesting.
So interesting.
And I know, like, I think about, like, there's certain variables that you can control, and then there's a whole slew of variables that come in with other people existing and being in the game with you that you can't control. And so I think that, like, it's interesting to think about when building and playing a deck.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and hopefully anyone listening to this has considered these things, and you know that this was a helpful discussion on the social elements. I do think it's really important to talk about whenever the opportunity arises. So so let's get to my final question for you about this deck, which is, anyone out there who is just so hyped hearing about this deck, maybe they saw it on Shuffle Up and Play in action being awesome, what advice would you give to those players just kind of in general looking to build this deck?
I think I sort of hinted earlier, a big piece of advice I'd give is, remember that your commander doesn't make tokens herself. Put in lots of token generators. But I also think that's super fun. And that's a great way to play this deck, is to put in whatever token generators you want. I think that another piece of advice I have is to remember that if you're going to try to make as many tokens as possible, people are going to try to remove as many tokens as possible. And so go in with that knowledge, be ready to have a lot of fun, whether you can make all of your cat tokens or not. And so I think those are the two pieces of advice I would think of. And then also put in more lands than you think you need.
Yep. That's, yep.
Just a few more. You don't have to go crazy, but like, consider having more lands than you might want.
Yeah, that's something I have been telling people who I've been teaching Magic to, that it's better to have a few more lands than not enough. But, you know, I also need to take my own advice in that way. So I like it.
Thank you for saying that. Sometimes the best advice is stuff that you should also be telling yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, sometimes you need to hear it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Oh, awesome. Also, I will say, both versions of the Jenny Fay artwork are stunning, but I personally am a fan of the showcase one. And so if you're thinking of building the deck, look at both. She has very different outfits and different hair color in both arts. Both are beautiful, but they're a little different.
Yeah, and I do want to say the showcase comes with a gilded foil version.
It does. I have that one behind the signed one.
Ooh. Yes. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, and Evelyn is the same way. And I really like the foiling on this particularly, because the actual card isn't really foiled, but the it's just the like gold border is just so shiny. And I love it.
And it looks really pretty. And I feel like maybe because the gilded foil cards, like while they are foil, like while there is foiling across the entire card, I have noticed that I don't feel like the gilded foiled cards like a Pringle as much.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
And so I know that is sometimes a concern for people. And so I'm like,
For sure.
I really loved the Streets of New Capenna. And I think that this particular showcase foiling treatment is so beautiful, and they're so pretty. Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing you can't see looking at the like digital version of the card. When I was building the Evelyn deck, I just bought both like a couple different versions because she's pretty cheap. And then the gilded foil one, I was like, oh wow, this looks so good. Like the online depiction does not
Yeah, it's not even close. It doesn't do it justice. Yeah. It's so pretty. And so I think that it's quite stunning, and that's fun. Yeah. And I think that, like, the kind of cool thing that they did with the Streets of Nuka Penna is that so many of the Cabaretti cards fit really well with commanders of that typing. Kind of like the same thing you probably saw with your Evelyn the Covetous deck with the Maestro cards. Is like that there's lots of fun, flavorful cards from that color pairing within the set, which can be really fun to think of when you're building the deck. Like, I know I still kept a lot of the cards from the Streets of Nuka Penna, like from the Cabaretti house, just because it's fun. And then also even just from other cards from the Streets of Nuka Penna that kind of fit well with her. And so that's maybe something that you can look at too, that feels thematic, that feels kind of fun, as a way to kind of like lean into that. And Jenny Faye does appear in the story of the Streets of Nuka Penna story. And actually, kind of funny, last deck I talked to you about, Giada, her and Jenny Faye have a moment in the story. Ooh. So I guess here we are in a full circle moment. The story's pretty good for this set. So if you haven't checked it out, the story's pretty fun here.
It's true. Yeah, and I really like that. I always like to look at cards from the same plane or the same kind of faction when I'm building a commander, just because it feels right. And yeah, like, I think a perfect example is when we were talking about Prosperous Partnership, how it's on Nuka Penna. It has the gilded kind of like 20s age vibe. It's a red-white card that makes green and white citizen creatures. It just feels like, yeah, you should play this in this deck. It feels right.
Yeah, yeah. Things like, you know, Rabble Rousing. You're like, oh, yeah, totally. Devilish Valet. You're like, oh, yeah. Wow, those people that designed these cards were really smart. Yeah. I can see that they were thinking of this. And then, like, you can feel smart yourself being like, huh, I noticed.
Yep.
I noticed the synergies. And so it can be, like, a good moment all around.
Totally. Yep. Yeah. 100% agreed. I love that so much. Well, I think that is a perfect place and kind of note to wrap up this episode with. It has been such a pleasure, Anna Margaret, to interview you about one of your decks. Please tell me, where can I find you? What kind of platforms can I watch your stuff on? And also, like, events and stuff. Where can I find you?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you again so much for having me. It's always such a pleasure getting to talk to you. I feel like you're so thoughtful in the way that you look at decks in Commander as a whole. So it's such a joy. Thank you so much. Thank you to everyone listening. I love getting to babble about cards and decks that I love. And so this was such a joy. You can hear me babbling about other things I love and enjoy everywhere on the internet at It's Anna Margaret. And so I'm on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, all the places. And so you can find me on the internet there. You can also find me in person at a few upcoming events. And so at the end of January, I'll be at Retromania in the Longmont kind of Boulder area. And so you can find me there. I will have a booth and lots of fun cosplay-centric things. I am planning to be a superhero, so you can see me there as Captain Marvel. Yes. And then looking towards February, I have a few upcoming Magic events I'm super excited about. I live in Colorado, and we don't often get major Magic events, but we have DreamHack Denver and the RC Denver coming in February. So you can find me as a guest at DreamHack Denver, hosted by the Laughing Dragon. I'm so excited to be a guest there. And so come see me close to my hometown in Denver. And then just a few weeks later, I'll be at MagicCon Chicago over my birthday weekend. And so it'll be so much fun. You can see me, oh my gosh, at MagicCon Chicago, they're doing a new Creator Clash game show thing that I'm going to be a part of. I don't fully know what it is, but it's like Family Feud style. So you can come see me potentially make a fool of myself or do well. I'm not sure. We'll find out. And I'll also be a guest at the Clue Party and have a signing table and all those things there. So come say hi at those upcoming events. And amazing. Hopefully I'll see you there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will be at MagicCon Chicago just to celebrate your birthday. That's the only reason.
Yes, perfect. I'm going. Okay. We're going to have a pod. We're going to play our token decks. It's going to be great. Everyone come find us and play Magic.
Yes. Yep. We'll be there. Let's do it. Happy early birthday.
Yay. I can't believe I'm going to be 30. I feel like there's those moments where, like, you know, there's, you need an adult in the room. And I still feel like I look towards the adultier adults and I'm like, oh gosh, no, I'm the adult in the room. And so it's kind of, kind of wild. You've got a few months, I think, before you, because we're both 29 now, but.
Oh yeah. We'll be flirting in our 30s later at some point this year. So it's happening.
It's time. But anyway, it'll be so much fun. And hopefully we'll see everybody there at these events.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then one last shout out to every single patron at the All That Glitters level, which I only have one of, and it's Jeff. Jeff, you're the best. Thank you so much for being a patron and listening to these episodes. One last time, Anna Margaret, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And to everyone listening, I hope you had a good time, and we'll catch you on the next one.